Duck South Studios in Oxford, Mississippi.
We're mass communicating.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for them.
This is the End of the Line Podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com.
I gave it a 10.
Sweep the leg. You have a problem with that.
And now, here are your hosts, Rocky LaFleur.
Everybody on? Good.
Great. Grand. Wonderful.
No yelling on the bus.
Josh Webb.
Sorry I had a fight familiar, your butt at the party.
And Jake Latondras.
I am bad news.
Also starring Rob Kroon.
I bet this guy's into the woods $100.
And Bradley Ramsey.
No, Mark, been saying.
Showtime.
All right, here we go. Hold your ears, folks. It's showtime.
Showtime, everybody! Showtime!
Welcome to the End of the Line Podcast. I'm Rocky LaFleur on this Tuesday morning in the Duck South Studios, and on the other end of the line with me is Josh Webb, and one of my favorite guests that we have pretty regularly now, Mr. Jimmy Slater. Guys, how are y'all?
Doing good. I'm just glad to be here today to join you and Josh.
Well, it is really good to have both of y'all. But, Jimmy, you know, before we started, we hit the record button. You were talking about the mosquitoes. And Josh and I talked about it yesterday, on yesterday's episode of the End of the Line Podcast. But they're really that bad in the Mississippi Delta right
it's
now.
It's terrible in the Delta right now, Rocky. As I was telling you right before we went on, man, you can't even walk in your house. They just swarm in your doors. And, you know, we got fans going out there up in front of our doors trying to blow it away to keep them away enough that we can come in. But when my wife came in from work late yesterday evening, as soon as she walked in and looked up, there was a bunch of mosquitoes that piled her in, and she had to go to killing mosquitoes in here. And we were still seeing mosquitoes at bedtime last night. It was, you know, they just rough. It's little black mosquitoes, and like I told somebody, it's not them little miniature mosquitoes. It's them that hit you like a torpedo, man.
When they hit you, you
feel them. I can promise you.
When there used to be a lot of cotton in the Mississippi Delta, you didn't have mosquitoes as bad because, I mean, they were spraying to the very end. And most of your chemicals that kill boll weevils, of course, would kill a mosquito. You didn't have mosquitoes. Man, I remember as a kid playing outside all the time. Never. You may have one mosquito bite you. And now,
right,
the Mississippi Delta, I guess it's because of the grain and really nobody's spraying much cotton anymore.
And they've changed a lot of these. You know, I'm not a farmer, but they changed a lot of the chemicals that they used to be able to use. They can't use anymore because it was, it would get mosquitoes, but it was devastating to other things as well. And they just kind of. Well, I go back and I use old DDT. You know, remember that, but they won't. You know, they can't spray that anymore. That was just such too strong for. Apparently, from what I understand, it was too strong. It was killing way more than what they wanted it to, or in the farming world. So that may have something to do with it. The chemicals just may not be quite as deadly to, say, mosquitoes and all as they once were.
Oh, man, I can remember the days of methamphetamine when you used to spray that for boll weevils. It'd kill every insect.
Yeah, that's right.
It's illegal to use now.
And another thing, we don't have as much cotton in the Delta as we once had. Not near about as much cotton. I use the example I've told some people. I said right here in Indianola, right within, I'm talking about just within a 10-mile radius of it, we used to have 5, 6, 7 gins. Now we don't have, we have zero. So,
we were talking about that the other day. Somebody was actually asking what gins are around and what's going on, and I mean it's not, but it's hard to come up with a handful of them.
Oh yeah, I mean it's You know, and like I said, right here in Enola, we used to have, I think, three or either four GMs right in town of Enola, you know. So it's just not as much cotton out there, so maybe they're not having to spray as much. And I don't know, mosquito, but the mosquitoes are thriving right now.
Man, yeah, they are.
You remember them being this bad, Jimmy?
This year's the worst I can ever remember them being, you know. I mean, you can just walk, like I said, in your yard, and they just cover you up, you know. I mean, they just be all, you know, just, I mean, mosquitoes, it's just mosquitoes everywhere.
Well, the thing about it is, I was talking to a farmer that farms in the Delta. He said mosquitoes are bad, but what's really bad is normally once the sun gets up, middle of the day, you don't have to deal with the mosquito unless you, you know, go fooling around in the shade somewhere in some bushes. But he said mosquitoes are biting you in the middle of the day.
You see them all day long. That's what I say. You just walk across your yard, and you'll have mosquitoes land on you, biting you. You know, I mean, it's just been an unusual year for it. It really has.
Well, hey guys, for those of you that are listening, you have seen the pictures of the Slater's Texas rig decoys and the Slater's jerk rig that came out yesterday, and we talked about the partnership that Jimmy and I formed together to make those available to the Duck South people. For the simple reason is, Jimmy, I've used those things. What year did you start making them? I mean, that was the first year I started.
It's probably
using
been
them.
five or 6 years ago. I've been making them probably for the last, you know. Just been growing the business for the last 5 or 6 years. So,
and,
5 years, bro.
Yeah, and I used them for at least 3 or 4 years, the last 3 or 4 years of Mossy Island Outfitters. And I liked them because, a lot of people noticed the first thing about the jerk rig was the floating handle. You never lose your line when it comes to a jerk rig. Bill Cooks, he was talking about that in the comments, and then I've never had any tangling when it came to my Texas rigs. I had some years ago that I bought somewhere cheap, and those suckers knotted up and got twisted all up. They weren't tangle free. It's something about yours, Jimmy, and the ones that you're making, that the weights just slide up and down so easy on the line.
Well, you know, Rocky, I appreciate that. We try to use the best material that's out there. You know, I just like with our achievements, I just don't believe in doing it always by the cheap way. You know, I like to use what I think is maybe the best way. And on the floating handle for the jerk rig, you know, I duck hunted, my boys duck hunted. I've been doing it all my life. It's the most aggravating thing in the world when you early in the morning, you'd be laying out that jerk rig and you drop the handle, that happens periodically, and down it would go in the water, and you got to reach your arm down under there, you know, and get soaking wet, cold, right off the go, trying to pull it back up. And I said, well, that was the reason I did the floating handle. And I think I'm the only one out there right now that's got the floating deal on the jerk rig. You know, I haven't seen anybody else yet with it, but that's been a big deal for us. And on the jerk rigs, people really like that. Another thing is it's luminous, you know, to where, you know, when it's dark, you know, it you can see it as, you know, when you're unwinding and stuff, you know, the handle got a little glow to it, luminous. And so, you know, that all goes into helping, you know, put it out. Because, you know, when you're putting that stuff out, it's way before daylight usually. And that has kind of helped. And then, of course, like I said, we use a good mono line. And the lead, we do all the lead here in the house ourselves, you know. I got the hole on the center of the lead, you know, that's drilled out to where it does slide up and down easier. And, you know, we use, of course, the coast lock swivel, this the high grade swivel, and ours are made in house. Ours are USA made. You know, they're not overseas or anything. We make every one of them right here. So, you know, we take pride in what we're doing with it, and we appreciate Duck South endorsing and using the members using our rigs. We really do.
Man, it's something that I believe in. Like I said, and I used for years in years at Mossy Island Outfitters. And I'm not one of those guys to sell my soul just to make a buck or get something free. Josh, you and I talk about that all the time. People,
that's right.
They would just go overboard to just deal with the first half of something they might not have ever used or believe in. But I'm telling you guys that's listening to this, I've used these things for years. I believe in them. They're great products. And they're competitive as far as pricing goes. They're competitive with anything out there. It's actually as good and cheaper than, I see people talking about other, I'm not going to say any names. I was going to say a name, but I don't think that I should do that. But they're competitive or below some of the competitive pricing that's out there.
Well, you know, we try to keep it competitive. You know, like I said, we do it all in-house. And, you know, I just feel like that when we're doing it ourselves, that we're able to control our quality better. You know, it's not, you know, if you're getting them overseas, and I don't mean this in any kind of negative way, if they're made overseas, you're not sitting there watching them made, so you don't know how well they're crimping them. You don't know, what kind of work is going into it. I'm not saying it's bad, but I do know what's going into mine because my son Adam and I, we kind of oversee and make sure it's all done right. You know, because I just believe in the importance of that. And then, I love USA made. You know,
that part of it right there, that part alone is hard to find. It's hard to find, and if you got a question or something happens, the fact that you can actually call and talk to somebody about it, that makes it worth every penny to me right there.
Right. And then, they have a problem with ours. I'm going to make it right. You guys know me. I'm just a man of, I'm going to make it right if they do have a problem with it. I've been real fortunate. I ain't had no problems. I count my problems on one hand with those weights so far over the years. But you know, everybody, there can be something that happens in anybody's product, but I tell you, the Slaters, we're gonna stand behind ours. I can promise that, another thing that's unique about what we do is, we got our standard lengths. I'm saying like 24 inch, 36 inch, 48 inch, rigs, but we will custom make just like a Duck South has. Some of their customers, they get enough requests. I'm using an example, and they say, we want a 30-inch rig, or we want an 18-inch. We make that, you can't get that done in a lot of other places. You know, we will custom make anything. You know, I made a bunch of rigs a couple of years ago for a guy in Arkansas. They were had a lot of rye. I think it was in Arkansas. They had a lot of rye hunters. He said, "I need 18-inch rigs," and I said, "Look, we'll make them." that's one thing. Like I said, if you have some of your members and all say, "Well, I really wish you had a certain length." Hey, all Rocky's got to do is let me know, and we'll take care of it.
Well, Jimmy, talking about duck hunting. Let's talk about you and duck hunting for a little while. Look, if there's anybody that's deserving of writing a book about stories, Jesus, this man is on the line with us right now. And it would be a number one outdoor seller in the outdoor category book. Holy moly. But, Jimmy, you personally, where did you get started? I mean, we've talked about back in the spring about your crappie fishing and where that all got started, but we never really touched on duck hunting. Where did you get started duck hunting?
Well, my daddy, of course, he liked to duck hunt, but my uncle and my cousins from Hollandale, Mississippi, when we were growing up real young, just young boys, they were getting big into the duck hunting, and they always had us come to Hollandale just about every weekend during duck season and hunt with them. And when I get out of Christmas holidays, I go stay with them for several days, I had three cousins there, the three boys and then my uncle, and that my daddy and my uncle were very close, and we just did a little, that's where we got started. We did a, there was a little ditch outside of Hollandale there. We put the boat in on that ditch and motor down and come in the backside of fields. And, of course, that was way before people were leasing these fields and leasing these duck holes. Mm-hmm. You know, you could just call, you know, your buddy, and my uncle knew a lot of them, said, hey, and your kid, we go out there and hunt. And they'd go fix up blinds. We had blinds and all that, you know, back then. And I can remember going down that ditch because it's, and my daddy, my uncle be driving the boat, and me and the boys being there, my daddy would be hand grabbing frogs going down the ditch to get to the duck hole. Bullfrog. we get bullfrogs and kill ducks too. I mean, it was just, but that's where it really started, you know, I guess hunting with them and getting to go with my daddy. And I just grew a look, my love part grew, you know, and I like wing shooting. You know, I like shoot birds. I like dove hunting. I like duck hunting. And I used to love to quail hunt. Because back when I was growing up, there were quail in the Delta. But we don't really have the quail here anymore. And I had bird dogs. I was, I always had labs. And, I'd rather go out and shoot a limit of ducks, I guess you say. That's what one of my boys told me one time. I said, you'd rather go shoot a limit of ducks or doves than hunt 50 class buck, wouldn't you? And I said, yeah, I really would. You know, I just liked it. And, the thing about duck hunting is you can socialize. You know, you can visit with each other. You can talk and you can, and when you're deer hunting, and I love, deer hunting, so I'm not talking bad about it, but, it's more of an individual game because you're on the stand by yourself. Sometimes you got two-man stands. You may have somebody sitting there with you. But, duck hunting, you're allowed to have five, six people or seven people in a blind, hunting. And you just, it's just a lot of – I just grew up liking it, But that's where I got my love part was started off right out there outside of Hollandale, Mississippi. And it's just never died. It grew, my love part. And I still love it today.
What about taking your kids hunting? Of course, you grew up, you were little and hunting with older folks at some point. What about those days when you finally got to the point where your kids could go? Did they enjoy it the way you did?
Yeah, they both love it very much, they're crazy about it. I ought to be a little out of shame of myself, but one of the first times that my oldest son Drew went duck hunting, he was invited by some people down there in Isola. Of course, Drew had been dove hunting and all, and I'd never had him duck hunting at that time. He wasn't but about 9-10 years old. I was getting ready to start taking him, to where he could, go with me and do what, because he could handle it, starting to get to the age where he could handle a gun real well and all. And anyway, so they go down there, and I used to have my sporting goods store, and I sent him down there with a pair of waders. It was catfish waders, seining waders that had been turned back in that were leaking, and I patched up the holes in it. And sent him down there, and it was a cold day, man. And my buddy called me about mid-morning, and he said, you ought to be ashamed of yourself. And I said, what? He said, this boy is soaking wet. He finally went to league, and he about froze to death. And he said, you got that sporting goods store. Why don't you bring that boy a pair of waders down here for in the morning? And said, you come and hunt with us too. And so anyway, I took him a pair of waders, and I told my friend, I said, well, there's one thing about it. I tested him pretty well to find out if he was really going to love it or not. Until this day, he still loves it. So the cold water didn't run him off. But I sent him down in a pair of leaking waders, I guess. So.
He's either going to have to love it or hate it. So that's good.
Yeah, if he didn't want it, if he hadn't wanted to hunt it bad, he'd have said, I'm done with this, It's too cold for me or something. But, my boy, Drew, my oldest one is Drew, and, of course, Alan is my younger son, and both of them love it. They used to do some guiding for Rocky on Mossy Island. They just love to be around,
Alan still got the record of Mossy Island Outfitters. Fastest 4-man limit ever. 12 minutes.
Yeah, they can both of them are good. I mean, I'm not saying they're the best, but both of them do a good job of calling ducks. Both of them do a good job of knowing how to set out the decoy spreads. That's important, too, and, what knowing where your wind is and different things. And, And both of them are good at it. I mean, you know, they do a good job. I mean, I know there's some a lot better, but they have very good success, and I'm proud of them. And they like to do it. And like I said, Rocky can tell you as much about them as I can because they know how to treat people. And, you know, so, but they do love to hunt.
Well, Jimmy, you spend a lot of time, and I'm not going to say where, but you spend a lot of time on the Mississippi River doing some duck hunting.
Right.
And if there's one thing that I've ever learned about when you bring up the words Mississippi River, if you come across somebody that has spent time over there, then you better sit down, sit back, and get ready to listen to some of the most interesting stories you've ever heard in your life. And I bet that you could, there's no telling how many you could go through in your mind of stuff that's things that have happened on that Mississippi River.
Well, yeah, you know, the river and some different lakes as well, you know. We hunted out of a boat a long time ago. Of course, we also hunted, you know, where you had to pull that old gumbo mud, too. But I like hunting out of a boat because it just, you know, the older I get, the less I can pull that mud. You know, it's harder on me pulling that mud. And, yeah, that Mississippi River is full of adventures, and there's lakes off of the river. There's little chutes off the river. You know, there's different places that the ducks will come. And when you find them, you know, you better take advantage of it, you know, because they're going to fly, fly that river. And I tell you, that river is really good when everything freezes up, you know. And but, yeah, there's, but the main thing is, for anybody that hunts, you got to respect it. That river can be an animal. You got to respect that river and be careful, and do right, and you know you'll be okay, and you'll enjoy hunting the river, hunting off the river. You know, it's not necessarily always hunting in the river. It's hunting places maybe just a little off the river. You know, but that you reach to the river maybe, and. You know, so, you know, like last year, we were hunting a place off the river. Of course, I'm a big fella, and, you know, Alan, he's a big guy. And we had two other boats. We were all hunting. We done to the limit. We had a great morning. And we were all putting our blinds down and finna pick up the decoys. And anyway, I'm on the back of the boat, and I'm fast enough for Alan putting the blind down. Yeah, you know, Alan. So Alan steps back here on the back of the boat with me to put that blind down, and man, that boat, the back of that boat goes down, starts going in the water. And, man, I broke for the front, and Drew and them were in another boat, and Drew and one of his buddies, the other side, they was in another boat, and they said, "Hey, man, y'all are sinking. Get to the bank." So we fire up. We take off, you know, and trying to get it on plane. And the front end of the boat just standing up because the back end's so heavy. So I'm just laying on the front end of the boat. And Jonathan Sykes and another boy in the third boat next to them. So Drew and them picking up the decoys. They said, "Follow them in. They may sink. They may meet y'all." And we finally, but we made it to the bank. And I'm telling you, when we loaded it on the trailer, I bet you a 50-gallon drum of water come out of that thing, out of that boat, you know. Or more, it just kept draining water. I said, "Lord, I mean, we're going down the lake and there's water on our feet, you know." And but you know, you just had to be careful. But I told Alan, "Now, and one of us gonna stand on the back of this boat, and we both big fellas. If I'm not doing it fast enough for you, tell me, and I'll just swap places with you. You're not gonna jump on the back of the corner of this boat with me, because we both were standing on the same corner." And I was having a little trouble getting that corner down. And like I said, he jumped back there going to help me. That corner of that boat went down. And when that water started coming in, you know, you just couldn't, you know, like I said, I broke for the front. And I laid down across the front deck. But we made it. You know, but it's adventures. You can always have something happen, you know. And you just have to be careful.
Man, the power of that river, though, Jimmy. You know, with Roy, and I think I've told a few of these before on the podcast, but
having a lot of people that work on the river when Roy had her clinic in Greenville, and people would come in and tell stories about that Mississippi River, man, just talking about how just the river itself would just spit up trees that were the size of telephone poles, like it was spitting a toothpick out of it, out of our
mouth. And swirls and stuff, you have to watch for all of it. I've jug fishing on that river many times growing up and all, catfish jug fishing, and you'd be going down there and you'd spread them jugs out and they'd be floating down that river. And like you said, you all of a sudden you see something like a big old tree, something just out of the river pop up, come exploding out of there, but it can be a fun place to hunt and fish. You just have to respect it and be careful. And,
you got a depth finder in your boat, Jimmy. I know you probably do.
Well, I do. It's not strictly a depth finder. It's a fish locator with a depth finder and all on it. And then we've had the GPSs in the boat where we can mark the spots and stuff like that.
What's the deepest point you ever saw in the Mississippi River?
Yeah, I was wondering that too, Rick.
I don't know. I couldn't even tell you. I know, because I'm not big about using that depth finder a lot, because I know where those channels are and all. But I can tell you this, it'll go just about as deep as you want it to go. I mean, when you're in that channel. Now, when you get out of that channel, believe it or not, that river's not as deep as you think it would be. When you get out, that's the reason they got those buoy markers in there for those for the things that the barges and stuff on the buoy markers, because you get outside of that and the thing gets real, so it can get real shallow in a hurry. You can bottom out. Several years ago, a friend of mine, they were over there hunting and going down the river, and he saw a spot that he thought he wanted to hunt. He was in the channel. He takes a left to go up in there, and he banks out. It looks like water, but he bottomed the boat out. So you have to, and you would think that that thing was deep like that all the way, but it's not. It's got the deep channel through there, and then when you get over to the, it looks deep, but a lot of those places aren't deep, so you have to be careful. He sandbarred out. He had to get out, and him and his buddy, and push it off the sandbar right there in the Mississippi River.
Man, it's
something. And you couldn't see it. It was underwater, but, it gets pretty shallow in some spots. So, that's, once again, you need to kind of either know where you're going, or you better stay in the channels, because you can get run into some problems.
Oh, Jeff, about Jeff Sides, and that's kind of where I was asking you from that. Jimmy, Jeff was talking about, I guess it was probably December, somewhere up in December before, the water really starts spreading out, the water's still pretty low in December. Jeff was talking about hunting one of those willow ruts on the side of the Mississippi River.
Right.
Everything on the side of that river was three or four foot deep.
That's right. Five foot maximum, maybe, but yeah, you're right. About 2 to 4, so that's what I'm talking about. You just got to kind of know how to get in there in those spots.
He said he pulled his boat off. Now, don't quote me on this exact number, but it still amazes me, because Jeff said he was looking at his, Jeff guided for me for years, good friend of mine, really good friend of Jimmy's and their family, but he said he was pulling that boat off, and it was 2, 2, 3, 3, 4, 4, 5, and then all of a sudden it went down to like 80 or 90 feet.
80 or 90. That's what I'm talking about, And that's when you get out there in that main channel, the main runway, I guess you'd say, but it's a channel, and that thing can drop off quick, man. And I tell you, Jeff, he probably knows as much about that river now as anybody his age, because he hunts that area a lot, and he scouts it. So he said, you got those spots that are 2 to 4 foot deep, and then all of a sudden they go 60 to 80, 90 foot deep. So you just got to know where you are and what you're doing.
That just amazes me because that river was, I mean, it was probably halfway dry. I mean, it was probably had no, you know, just enough water to come up out of the main channel to flood the edges. And yeah, here it is still 90 or 100 foot.
Yeah, that's what I say. That thing had, I told some people one time, it's like in some areas it has no bottom almost. You know, it just goes so deep. And, well, you know, when you see them big barges running, you know, they're sitting pretty deep in the water themselves when they're loaded down, and it just, you know, it just chug right on through there.
Well, the lot of things, one small fact that a lot of people don't know is the Mississippi River itself supplies what we call it's the aquifer. It's everything west of the, I think it's the Yazoo River. Mississippi River actually refills that aquifer.
Oh yeah, and that's, you know, and that's what I'm talking, you know, and it takes, I mean, you're looking at people that, well, it takes care of refills on both sides. What I'm getting at, it's not just on the Mississippi side. You got Arkansas, Louisiana, you know, Missouri. I mean, it just goes right on, you know. It's amazing, really, what it, you know, what that river does,
which I've heard stories all my life, but what, I mean, hunting on that river for people who aren't familiar with it, I mean, is it just mostly mallards up and down it, or what's it like? I mean, I know what I've heard.
It seems like it's more mallards than anything else, you know, that fly that thing, you know, and, you know, a lot of people that don't know it, they'll be running down through there, and if they see ducks get up in a certain area, they'll decoy there. I mean, they'll set their decoys and all up there because it seems like so many times those ducks will come back to that area. You know, when you find an area, it seems like they come back to it. You know, and but it's, yeah, mostly what we, you know, mallards seem to, you know, we do real well on the mallards at you know, in the, off the river. But now it's not an everyday type thing. Now people think, you know, you got to catch it at the right time. Like I say, you know,
yeah,
you can kill ducks on it, but seems like, you know, you do a lot better when maybe things are froze up.
I know my granddad and all them, when they used to hunt the river all the time, it got to the point, which they hunted it for years and years and years, and it got to the point where, if it wasn't, which on that river, you always have to watch, you know, what level the water's at. But, you know, he'd say, okay, it's at what, you know, the river's at this level, we can get back to that hole and hunt it, you know, but we
That's
can't
right.
Fool with it. And it's always cool to me to hear them tell those stories because, you know, for years and years and years of hunting it, they just, you know, they'd wait for it to get to this before they'd even go. And then they knew they wouldn't be able to go here unless it was like this, and it's really cool to hear them talk about it.
Well, it's the same thing.
I've been some places with them. Actually, that's what I was about to say. And I've been some places with them, and that's how he said that they would actually find a lot of the places they'd duck hunt was when the you know, in the early spring, you know, February, March, April, they'd go fishing and get way back in some places and make note of it, and then, when the water got right in the winter, they go back here and duck hunt it. It was just really, really cool to hear.
Right,
well,
you know,
a lot of people
they keep a little chart. They know what the river stage is when they can get to that certain spot, whether they're fishing or hunting. So then they know, you know, that when the river stage hits so many feet, yeah, we can get to this spot, or we can't. You know, it's not high enough, we can't get to that spot. So then, you know. That's the reason so many I watch at river gauge, you know, whether it's hunting or fishing, because they've been hunting certain holes or fishing certain fishing holes for years, and they know what that river level's got to be able to get into there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's how they do it.
you don't need to risk. If you've never been on that river before, you don't need to risk trying it. Especially in the dark.
Now, you know, you need to kind of know where you're going. And like I said, we use a lot of the GPSs, you know, because we've already charted a lot of the places that we do hunt. you know, whether it's in the lakes, off the river, or in the river, you know, but you kind of, you know, you have most people that hunt them, most people that you talk to, they know, they got a GPS, so they know exactly where they're supposed to be running, and if you're not familiar with it, you don't want to try it in the dark, I can tell you that. You know, I wouldn't. I respect it too much, you know, and look, I'm still hesitant about going in some of these places when it is real dark, but, you know, we're able to do it, and we've been fortunate, and of course, we're going to wear them life jackets, and, you know, we're going to try to do what's right, you know, and make sure we're safe as we can be.
All right, Jimmy, I got one for you. Out of all the time of being at Slater's, or this could be your own personal story, I don't care. What is the craziest thing you ever heard or craziest story you ever heard about duck hunting? You don't have to use any names.
Well, as you know, I've heard a lot of them, but I was on one myself, you know, and this is probably 30, 35 years ago, Rocky. I was with 9 other guys, just to rephrase it back. This was before people, like I said, started really leasing these breaks and stuff. Well, there was 10 of us that got together, and we leased a break over out from Colony Town. And at that time, it was big money. For $1,000, we put up $100 a piece. $1,000. And we leased a break. Colony Town. And we got, man, it was full of ducks, I'm telling you. And anyway, we had blinds built all through there and all. Well, I go, one of these guys was a member. I'd never been hunting with him before, wasn't. You know, we were members of the same club, but one day he says, hey, man, we weren't big on evening hunting, but it was toward the end of the season, so we were going to do a little evening hunting. And he said, why don't we go together over there? And he said, we just take one boat, you know, we paddle in, I'll drop you off at your blind. And he had a blind just a little ways down from me, you know, it was in a shouting distance. And so I said, well, that'd be all right. So I go in, but I make the mistake, I let him drop me off first. I didn't keep the boat. I let him keep the boat. Well, it wasn't long, you know, I would set out the decoys, and man, I was calling them, and, you know, shot pretty good. And anyway, it wasn't long. I had to limp, you know. So he keeps shooting, and I'm standing there waiting a while. I'm unloaded, you know, and waiting a little bit because my ducks are laying out there on the water. You know, I knew what I had. Just had to, you know, wait for him to come get me so we could pick them up. And, I said, that was a mistake. I may let him take that boat. But I finally hollered at him. I said, hey. He said, yeah, you know, hollering across the break. I said, I got the limit. He said, well, I don't. I ain't out of shells yet.
No.
He keeps shooting. And it starts getting dark. And I'm not patting myself back, but I was going by the law. You know, I've done quit a long time ago. It starts getting dark. And he's shooting the animal. So I hollered at him. I said, hey, man. He said, what? I said, it's getting late. I said, well, you breaking the law. We need to go. And he said, Jimmy, he said, now this hollering across the break, he said, let me ask you something. Back then, the speed limit on the highways, I don't know if y'all remember, I was 55. I'm talking about on interstates. For a few years, we had the speed limit at 55, the state did. And maybe nationwide. But anyway, he said, hey, let me ask you something, hollering across the break. Have you ever drove over 55 on the highway before? Of course, dumb old me. I said, yeah. He said, well, you was breaking the law then. I'm breaking the law now. I said, well, I'm going to tell you what. I thought to myself right then, if I can get out of here and I don't get a ticket. But this hunting with this crazy person here, I'll never hunt with him again. And of course, about 5 minutes later, he quit shooting and come guide me. You know, he shot about 10 minutes, probably too late. And man, I chewed him out. We got them ducks, and of course he still didn't even have the limit. He was a terrible shot, and but anyway, we come out of there, and I said, we get out of here. I said, I promise you one thing, friend. I said, we get out of here, and we don't get a ticket. You don't have to call me about hunting with you no more, because I won't hunt with you no more. I like you and all that, but we're not gonna hunt together. And we never went back hunting again, and that's just. But I'll never forget him saying, "You drove over 55 on the highway before," and go, "Yeah." He said, well, you was breaking the law when you did that, and I'm breaking the law now. I said, man, come get me. I'm going out of here. I know you're not supposed to tell those kind of things, but maybe the statute of limitations is way past on that, you know. But I'm telling you, I didn't break the law, but he hit that shot about 10 minutes too late, and it had me so scared, man. you know, because I could just see us getting tickets and getting out of there, because I never had a hunting violation, a fishing violation in my life, and it would have just, I couldn't have stood that. But anyway, we did get away out of there and got home, and him and I never hunted again. We were still friends, but we just never went hunting together again. But, you know, you hear all kind of stories, you know, and hear people that, you know, take chances and some that don't, you know, and, I've heard I'm going out there before, and even had one that hunted with me one time, dropped his shotgun in the break. In that break in Collingtown, I guess it's still sitting there because that water was so deep we couldn't get it. It dropped a Browning Auto 5. Down it went like an anchor. But, you know, you have all kind of stories. And if you hunt and fish long enough, you're going to have a few tales. You know, you should. I've been fortunate, I guess, I can remember most of the tales. I try to remember these stories because I like to share them with the boys and stuff like that a lot, which Rock has been around when I share some of these stories.
Oh, man, look, I'm glued. At Thanksgiving and Christmas, you want to find me? I'm sitting on the couch right in front of Jimmy listening to stories.
I enjoy it, and like I said, one of the stories I'm telling are actual things that happened, you know. I'll tell you one other one. I heard this story one time, and I wasn't there, and then I'll let y'all go. But anyway, it's supposedly a game warden, and he'd been trying to catch this was years ago. He'd been trying to catch a couple of these duck hunters, you know, that he knew was messing up, but they were supposedly slick, you know, the way the story goes, and they were getting away from him. Well, it was on Christmas morning.
I know this one.
Okay. Anyway, it's on Christmas morning, and they thought he would probably be home with the family on Christmas, so they out there pounding ducks. One of them says, you hear something? The guy said, no, man, be quiet. There's ducks everywhere, and they shooting. The guy says, I hear something. They start listening, and the game warden's paddling up the woods singing, here comes Santa Claus, here comes Santa Claus. He heard that John.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That was supposedly game over singing, coming up. Here comes Santa Claus.
Singing,
like,
coming up
through
there.
Yeah.
That was Bill Green.
That's right. I wasn't going to call no names, but that's who it was. He probably nailed a couple of them. And, you know, so if you're ducking, you know, you're going to hear these tales. Like I said, that people would get in the store years ago and they'd start talking about that. That was a story that went around this Delta for a long time, you know. And whether it's true or not, I assume it is, because so many people have heard it and thought about it and said he was singing coming up through the break because he done caught him, you know.
Pilgrim was the most creative game warden to ever walk the face of the earth. If he was after you, he was going to find a way to catch you.
Oh, I guarantee you. That's what I hear about him. And, you know, we had one right here years ago. Mr. Kendall Ross, we called him Dad Ross. He lived in the Sunflower, and he was like that. I remember one time I was on the Sunflower River running trot lines. And boy, I was, you know, running my trot line, and I heard something. I looked, and he was laying up under a bush. See, I guess checking to make sure that he didn't know whose trot line it was to see who it was. And he was stood up out of that bush. And I said, Mr. Ross. He said, I'm just checking you out. He said, you okay? He said, I'm just making sure. I'm talking about hiding in the bush, man, on the Sunflower Riverbank. Mm-hmm. But they can be creative. You know, a good game warden, you know, game wardens do that. You know, they do a good job of what they have to do. And, I mean, they have to cover a lot of territory. And, you know, it's not a lot of them to cover the territory they had to cover. So,
yeah, you know, and everybody you're dealing with has a gun. So, and they don't get paid anything. Jeez. I can't imagine doing that for what they take for pay and dealing with somebody that has a gun or some type of weapon every time you check them.
Look, I'm going to tell y'all one more story. But this is when I was hunting in Hollandale with my daddy and my uncle and cousins when I was a young boy. And they were. And anyway, we're sitting there, and it's like a couple of days, maybe Christmas Eve. Anyway, you know, it's right at Christmas, and, man, the ducks weren't flying at all. We'd been in that blind all day and had not fired a shot, okay? But we were enjoying ourselves, but we hadn't fired a shot. And my daddy had old Jensen duck call. And he grabs that Jensen, and he said, well, it being the Christmas season, he said, I think I'll play a little Jingle Bells. And he went to blowing Jingle Bells on his duck call. and a whole roll of mallards dropped in there, and we went to shooting ducks. And so we killed about three or four. This is a true story, man. And we hadn't seen a duck all morning. We were playing Jingle Bells, and had another guy named Billy Winters from Hollandale that lived, that was hunting with us that morning with my uncle and daddy and them. And anyway, so that duck flew off, and about 15 to 20 minutes later, we're still sitting there, you know, and old Billy looks over at daddy, and he said, "Hey, Eddie," he said, "you might hit that Jingle Bells again." So there's some crazy thing, man. But I'm telling you, he was playing Jingle Bells, and a group of mallards dropped in there on them decoys, and we went to blast, and he said, "Hey, Eddie, you might hit that Jingle Bells again." So things can happen. It's crazy, but it's all fun.
That's why they fly south during the winter. All day.
Yeah, that's right. We have a great time, and I, you know, that's what I want people to do is, as they grow up, is have the memories. As people do things, remember these things, because, you know, it's things that can be passed down and talked about. And, you know, hunting and fishing is a great pastime for people, and, you know, you just can't beat it. I mean, you know, it's and we're so blessed to have it. God has blessed us and given us the great fishing and hunting that there is, and all that he has. And, you know, you think about some areas, some countries, no, they can't do any of this. So we're blessed. And God's taking great care of us and giving us these natural things that we can do of hunting and fishing.
Well, Jimmy, I'm going to let you off the hot seat. Guys that's listening to this, go out and buy some of those Texas rigs and drinks. Yeah, look, this is a home-based business for Jimmy and his son. And look, you're supporting a local business by buying these. It's sure not like Duck South's making a killing off of them, I promise you. But you are supporting a local business, and that's what we need to get back to in this country, is supporting some more of these local stores.
I appreciate that. I mean, and that's always been my feeling on the fishing and hunting. Hunting and fishing, you know, is, you know, do as much of it as you can yourself. Keep it made right here in the United States, and mine are made right here in Mississippi, in the middle of Mississippi. So, you know, Rocky, we appreciate Duck South using our rigs, the Duck South membership, and endorsing them and approving them as their official rig that they want to use. We appreciate that.
Oh, heck yeah. Well, Jimmy, Josh, thank y'all again for being here. We want to thank all of you that listened to this edition of the End of the Line podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com.